You're listening to the Irish Times Roisin Meets podcast.
Welcome back to Roisin Meets. I'm Roisin Ingle, and my guest today is someone who's one of Ireland's best-loved broadcasters. Her career in RTE has spanned more than three decades, including presenting the Eurovision Song Contest in 1995. Mary Kennedy is co-presenter of Nationwide and the author of the best-selling books What Matters, Lines I Love, Paper Tigers and Lines for a Living. Her latest book is called Home Thoughts from the Heart, and she came in to talk to me about that. We ended up having a great conversation, and there's some interesting stuff there about the fact that our family used to say the rosary after tea every night. But we talked about lots more. Here she is, Mary Kennedy. Mary, thank you very much for coming in.
Well, I have to say it's lovely to be here. And this is the first book that part of the, you know, putting it out there involves podcasts. So I feel very 21st century.
Because we have to tell everyone it's your fifth book.
I know. Oh, yeah, I know.
That's very prolific.
I do like writing. And I've always, even like when I was in school and young, I loved writing essays and just kind of seeing where it went. And really that's what this book is.
But I think what it is, it's like with Nationwide, you have such a connection to your viewers. And I think through the books, you seem to have that connection with readers too, because you talk about things that people, that just people's lives, whether it's their garden, whether it's what they're putting on the table at home, family, all those things. Very ordinary, but so important to everyone.
Yeah, well, those are the only things I can write about, the things that really are part of me. And I do, I know the book is called Home Thoughts from the Heart, but I do write from the heart and always have done. And what's been nice over the past four books, and even with this one in the short time it's been out there, is the reaction that you get from people, that they feel if you, you know, you talk about something, be it the garden, or in the last book I had one recipe, and the number of people who've come up to me and said, we made that on Christmas Eve.
Because it was,
it was an amalgam of two recipes. It was a beef and Guinness stew, but I had mixed the Avoca recipe and a really old recipe that Brenda Costigan had in a Sunday newspaper about 20 years ago. And I put it, my version of it in, and I just can't get over the number of people that kind of have made it since.
It's mad. And you have a French dressing in here.
Well, yes,
but I'll be trying.
Oh, no, it's the very simple one. But back in the day, Roisin, when I lived in France for a year and was introduced to the joys of lovely salads and vinaigrette dressings, and I came home and I said I was going to kind of sophisticate my family, and the only place we could get olive oil was in the chemists.
I know. My mum always says that when she came over from England, she couldn't get over. Yep. She went looking for olive oil and they were like, what are you talking
little
about?
Bottles like this.
Yeah, yeah.
In the chemists.
And there you were.
They used it for ear waxing and things like that. That was about it.
Oh, them were the days.
Yes.
But listen, speaking of back in the day, you dedicate the book to your sister and your brothers. So the first section is really much about you looking back and reflecting on your childhood. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, yes, it is significant that I dedicated it to them because it is about home. And I do feel that we have been shaped by the home in which we grew up, which was Clondalkin. Both my parents were from the city centre, and their family said, oh my God, you're moving out to the sticks.
Yeah,
when they got married
it.
In the mid-50s. The bus didn't, it was the 51 bus, and when they got married first, the bus didn't go the whole way out to Clondalkin. It was unreal. And the nice thing was that my mother and father had a double wedding with my mother's sister and her husband, and they bought two houses side by side.
So
it was really like...
Can I ask you where in the city centre they were from?
My mother was from Ellesmere Avenue, which is just off the North Circular Road,
yeah.
Hanlon's Corner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I remember we used to go up on a Thursday to visit our granny in the summer, and the cattle would be coming down the North Circular Road on their way to the market.
I love it.
The farmers would park them, park up in the park and come up. And that is one of the memories I have. My father was from Joseph's Road, which is further down near the Quays. And he went to Brunswick Street, she went to Stanhope Street, and they got married in Ockham Street Church. So that's kind of the area.
So then they get houses next. I mean, it's very, I was going to not use the word incestuous, but that family thing of very tightly knit,
yeah,
and wanting to be beside each other, because some people be running in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think that's a real gift, that these two sisters got on well with each other and wanted to kind of, well, they got married, they had a double wedding, and then they didn't actually go on honeymoon together, but they both went around Ireland and they went in different directions and they met.
Oh, that is. And they did that on purpose. Like,
yeah, they do. Right,
we'll go on our separate ways and then we'll meet up
and have two nights there and then come back. But I do think that's a real gift. And I think it's a gift for me, A, that I get on with the three siblings, and also that we all live in Ireland. The three of us live in Dublin, and then Deirdre, my sister, lives on the Aran Islands. So it's very, very, it's nice. And there, they don't pretend. Well, Deirdre doesn't make anything of it. She's pleased that it's dedicated to her, but the two boys wouldn't give you the soot of it, you know.
Really?
Oh, not at all. No. They'd say, well, you're running out of people to dedicate to.
Well, I'm sure it means a lot to them.
Yeah, I hope so.
When you talk about, because you do mention something about, I think in the dedication, about the values and the way you were brought up really shaped who you are. So when you think about sort of your mum and dad, yes, and the life, that the bringing up that you had, what, yes, is it that you value and you got from that?
Well, there were three standout things, I suppose. One was religion, Catholicism. The second was discipline. And the third was community. Because they were head, neck and heels in everything. My mother more so into the kind of the church. We said the rosary every night after tea. My father, went to mass and brought us. And there's some photos of scowly faces, being brought down to mass and things like that. But discipline was strict. Again, my mother would have been the bad cop and he was the good cop. But then you need both. And community, they were both equally. There was the credit union, there was the ICA, there was the planned giving, there was the drama group, there was the Dlorna Nile and Muintean Atira. They were in Tidy Towns as well. My father was one of the startups of Tidy Towns in Clondalkin. So that's it. Yeah, those are the three linchpins, I suppose. Roisin,
take me back to doing the rosary every night after tea, because I'm fascinated by this. I cannot think of anything worse. And if I'd been made to do anything like that, I would have just said, no, you're not having
would
it.
You?
I would have been out the door. See, my mother was a heathen Englishwoman, Mary. Yeah. See, so I was never subjected to that stuff. Mm. She was a Protestant.
Yeah.
But then she actually did change to be a Catholic because, that's what you kind of did.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I just have no insight into that world. But I know a lot of people were saying the rosary after tea.
Yeah, well,
Ireland.
Picture the scene. Okay. You're in a kitchen in Clondalkin. There's mother, father and four children around the table, and my mother had it was little hooks, but there was JFK and Jackie on the, that was the picture on it, and she had a couple
of the Sacred Heart there
sets in the dining room.
Okay. I'm getting it yeah.
She had a couple of little sets of rosary beads hanging up, and coming towards the end of the meal, we would do everything in our power to try and distract her, and you'd try to put something sensational into the conversation, and then it always, you would just say, okay, that's great, thanks man, that was lovely dinner, or tea as it was in those days, and then say, hang on there now, and then the mantra was, Tom, hand me down the beads.
Sorry, Mary.
So we had to put the chairs, kneel into them. And the thing was that the cousins were next door, and it just wasn't a tradition in their family, even though they were, the same upbringing. But if my brother heard one of his three male cousins coming in and closing the back door next door, he would make sure that they were roped in and had to say the rosary.
Oh, would he be calling out? No, in you come.
If we're going to do it, in you come, yeah.
Because it takes ages. It feels like it goes on forever.
It takes 10 minutes.
Is that all it takes?
It takes 10 minutes, but my mother had a few trimmings that she would add on as
well. Oh, yeah, see, that's not right. Don't add on things. Yeah. It's bad enough.
Well, I have to say now, Roisin, none of us wanted to do it, but I would consider myself to be a person of faith and a kind of a very traditional person. I feel that spirituality is really a part of my makeup, but not necessarily the way it was back then. But I did go to make a programme for Nationwide in Medjugorje, and just the kind of the mantra of the rosary was actually very appealing for several reasons, one of them being that it brought back these memories of my mother and of family and growing up.
At the end of the day, that must be such an evocative thing when you hear that now, because you did it so many times in your kitchen or in your house.
Yes. And I went through a period then of walking rather than running because my knees were giving me problems. And I used to, when I was walking, not when you're running because you just don't have any extra breath, but I would say the rosary and offer it up for something. Now, it could be something like, could I please have lost £2 by next weekend when I had to get into this dress. But yeah, it was nice. It's part of, you know,
well,
part
well,
of me.
Because I mean, spirituality and religion definitely is running through the book in various different ways. And then I noticed on the big chapter about your eldest daughter's wedding, there's a lot of beautiful pictures and about all that celebration. And also your friends who are gay who got married.
Oh, yes.
The fashion designer, Don O'Neill.
Don O'Neill and Pascal. And he is the man who actually designed Eva's wedding dress.
And for Oprah he's designed and all sorts
indeed,
of people.
Yeah.
So that's a very nice thing. But I was thinking reading that, you are obviously very spiritual and traditional Catholic,
yes.
But your friends who were getting married, and that would be against what the Catholic Church is. How do you resolve those things in your head as a Catholic?
I've often been asked, so are you an a la carte Catholic? And I say, yes, very much so. I am an a la carte Catholic because there are certain things about the Catholic Church that I just cannot subscribe to. And that's one of them. I just, it comes down to human rights when it comes down to equal rights. And I am really proud of the fact that Ireland did such a beautiful job with the referendum on equal rights and gay marriage, and that it was such a beautiful day, and that these gorgeous photographs and coloured flags went right around the world. But I also have a problem with, the whole Catholic teaching on divorce. I'm divorced, and yet I feel this is my church and my God and my Jesus. And I always kind of say to myself, well, when a Catholic dictate is being put out there, I say, what would Jesus do in this situation?
WWJD.
And I really do feel he would be a person of compassion and love and forgiveness. And well, not that forgiveness is necessary in the two examples I've given you, but that even in a situation, where forgiveness is needed.
What about another subject? Because Brianna Parkins on the Rose of Tralee, which you're very involved in, and she stood up, this is a couple of years ago, and sort of said, she thought there should be a referendum. But I don't think you were very happy about her doing that. Not because necessarily the issue, but just you didn't think it was the place.
Absolutely. Well, you see, I have a news background, if you like, because I was a newscaster and now I work on Nationwide, which comes out of News and Current Affairs. And I come from the background which says that if you put out one viewpoint, you've got to give equal time to the other viewpoint. And that was not the situation, and it wasn't possible. Therefore, I know there was a kind of an all sorts of fudging because Anthony, who's a dear friend, Anthony O'Gara,
the director of the
festival, said, oh yeah, but you can't control what people are saying, and said, no problem. I do have a problem about kind of raising sensitive political issues on stage, unless you kind of say, okay, well, that's fine for that person to say that. Now, who are we going to get up there and do the other end? That's the only problem I had with it.
Okay, and on that issue, then,
mind you, it led to the most awful, one of the kind of the horrible parts of social media is that you get people polarized and you get, as my son refers to them, the keyboard warriors.
Yes.
And that was just horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
In terms of stuff that you got?
For both. And also for Brianna.
Oh, Brianna got a lot of stuff,
I got it as well.
Yeah.
It was just obnoxious. Yeah. I wouldn't, support that kind of a viewpoint at all.
So we've talked about the gay marriage, which you support. We've talked about
divorce. Can I say that having been at Don and Pascal's wedding, it was just the most joyous occasion.
I love their outfits. They're so cool.
Don designed those.
Yeah.
But it's more, I think it was actually about the fact that they had to wait so long. Yeah.
It was such a celebration.
Yeah.
Yeah. So divorce, you are very much in favour of, having needed one.
Yes.
And then what about the abortion issue? How did you feel about the referendum in the end?
Oh, I have no problem with I think everybody has a right to choice. It wouldn't be I don't think it's anybody's ideal.
No.
But
Having had an abortion, it wasn't something I really was delighted to do. It's a hard thing to do.
Oh, it's not for me to decide, but I also, that's where I think, what would Jesus do in this situation? I don't know.
I think he was very compassionate, wasn't he, to like the likes of Mary Magdalene and various people who found themselves in difficult situations and stuff. But anyway, that's enough religion. The rosary, we're saying the rosary now in a second. Would you still say it? Like,
if I was out for a walk,
really?
I would. Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So I mentioned your daughter getting married. That was obviously a very big time. And you come across from this book as, someone who really values celebration and marking things and making moments where you can, And I think that's a really lovely thing. Mm-hmm. because sometimes you can go through and you don't. I mean, some people do it really well and other people are less good. I would find myself sometimes I maybe should make more of things and make more celebrations because we're only here.
It's what suits you. Yeah. Well, that would be my mentality. Yeah. I think it's what suits you. And I know because I'm further along the path of life and my children are grown up now, I could stock two shops for every occasion on decorations. I have Valentine's, Patrick's Day, Easter, Halloween, and now weddings.
You go all out, all good line in wedding decorations. When they were younger, were you kind of one of those mums who the whole house turned into something?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you see, two of my boys, one his birthday is the 22nd of October and the other is the 29th. So that was a great excuse to buy loads of Halloween decorations.
Yes. So you had big celebrations then. Yeah. And then with this, with the wedding, you were kind of wedding HQ in your house.
Yeah, and again, because we're talking about home and the whole book really centres around home in all its different guises, its various guises, I was very pleased that Eva and Benny were getting married and that Eva was leaving from home. Yeah. And that was important to me. And there's actually, you know, there was a nice moment when everything was ready. Well, it went on for months, but on the morning of the wedding, which was November, so it was, you know, winter, some of the neighbours came in when everybody was ready and had some Prosecco and sandwiches, because I love sandwiches. So we had sandwiches and Prosecco.
What are your favourite sandwiches,
Mary? Egg.
Okay, just...
And my second choice is tuna.
Okay, good to know. If I ever have you around for afternoon tea, I'll know what to make.
Soft, mushy sandwiches. And then for other neighbours to be out on the road as she was leaving, I thought that was so special.
And it's kind of unusual. Like a couple of people, one woman on my road, that the same thing, a young woman. I was showing my daughter, look, she's going to get married from her house, because it's not something you see a lot anymore, because obviously people go and live with their partner before
else they go and they choose a location for the
wedding. It's in the hotel and they're
and they leave from the hotel. And the other thing then was the second day of the wedding, the day two, was back at the house.
Because nowadays
as well,
you can't just have one day, can you? No. You can't just get married and have a wedding and then it's over. No, it has to be two
days.
Two,
well, the second day
three.
Was in the house.
Okay,
that was...
You loved it.
Unprecedented.
Really, in terms of the numbers you had.
Absolutely, because you don't actually know. There was one point where I was sitting, standing at the kitchen sink, and the dresser is over the other side of the kitchen, and I wanted to get a jug, and I just said, no.
That's too much of an effort to get.
It's not going to happen. I just, you know, so the milk carton came out.
Brilliant. The other bit of the book that I thought was very honest of you and really struck me was a piece. It starts off with you sort of listening to Ryan Tubridy on the radio. And someone who used to work here, actually, Roisin Agnew, was on.
Really?
Talking.
Oh,
yeah,
Roisin's
great.
Gosh, I didn't know that. That's where she worked.
So she was writing about how she, as a young woman in her 20s,
28.
had kind of felt that she was burnt out, and she went off to live in Lisbon and to recalibrate everything. And you write very, very well about at the time you just weren't feeling your normal self. I mean, you've written before about kind of being, you know, mildly depressed or having low days, loneliness and isolation, that kind of thing. But this was a different thing that you were feeling. So,
well, this was something that I hadn't recognised in myself before, but like it wasn't actually the starting point of it. It was obviously the turning point when I heard that, because I had up for a while, really for the 6 months before it, been feeling just flat. And the colour I would use to describe it would be grey. Even though I was like, part of the problem was I was doing so much travelling and I was like in Malawi, which is one of the most colourful and beautiful places in the world. But just within me, I would describe myself as being coloured grey and flat. But also then there were little moments of anxiety and of being totally overwhelmed. Mm. And, even then I would lie in bed at night and say, no, Mary, great, great, great. Now, this is what you've achieved during the day.
Yeah.
And you've done this, that. Wow, well done. Great, good for you. But it is cumulative and it does kind of sap your energy and sap your resources. And also then it starts niggling and gnawing away at your confidence. You're nodding, Roisin.
I am, sorry. I shouldn't.
You're probably juggling.
This is audio.
You're juggling all these things.
Telling them I'm nodding.
Probably.
Yes, I totally relate to what you're saying, yeah.
But it's, yeah, we do. We put an awful lot of pressure on ourselves. And then I was sweeping the floor that morning and listening to Ryan and listening to this young woman. And she was talking about the fact that, you know, within her circle, there were people who felt, I really don't feel I can go on holidays. That's awful. that is awful. Or, you know, it's frowned upon if you leave your desk at the normal clocking off time of maybe 5:30. That is wrong. And I suppose I'm old enough. My father was involved in the Labour Party and also in workers' politics, and would have, I kind of remember clearly the number of people who fought for unions and for workers' rights. Yeah. And we're kind of going the other way around now, which, you know, I think a balance is good.
And the fact that Roisin at such a young age was having that experience. And I think a lot of young people are. And then they're having the added pressures of rental, trying to find somewhere and being able to pay rent and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But in terms of you, you sort of gradually realised that that's what was going on with you.
That was a kind of a wake-up call. I mean, I'd heard of burnout before, but I didn't associate it with myself, and I wouldn't have known the elements of it, the symptoms, which I researched. And things like, you know, jittery arms and shortness of breath and those kind of feelings of anxiety are symptomatic. And I just said, okay, well, enough is enough. Now, I was on the Late Late Show the day after this book was published, and I could not believe, coming out of the studio, the texts that were in there from friends and from people who wouldn't have spoken about it before, and who just said, you know, this is something we have to take on board, and it's no harm to talk about these things.
Yeah. Did you feel a bit vulnerable writing about it?
Well, I always do when I'm writing about something like that. It was the same with the Valentine's Day chapter in the last book. I always do feel very vulnerable, and I kind of feel that I'm exposing myself. But I always counter that by saying, look, Mary, write it, because I do write. I just kind of blurt it out.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like including it,
you don't have to press send. That's a good idea.
And I have never not pressed send.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm actually quite pleased about.
And speaking of Valentine's, are you in a relationship?
No.
And have you been, like, in the last while? Is that a very prurient question to ask?
No, I
just
haven't.
When you mentioned the Valentine's chapter.
No, that was the Valentine's chapter in the last book, which was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was about, we had had a celebration, and there was nobody going to be coming in. The kids were all gone off on Valentine's weekend, so that was the reason for it, no. Okay. But I do have an issue, not like that you're being prurient, about being defined in terms of whether or not you're part of a relationship.
I wouldn't be defining you now. I'm just just curious about that. But I think you're right. And I think especially with women more than men.
Yes, I should have qualified it by saying that, because I don't think,
ask. I'm just very nosy. And I ask men about kids and things and stuff like that, and how they manage to juggle their parenting, because I think it's really important. Because men do juggle their parenting, but they don't get asked about it for some reason. Because as if the woman is just doing everything.
But they're much better now. I mean, I have friends whose children have kids, and they have, first of all, much better maternity leave and also parental leave, which the men are just, you know, sizing up to.
Can I talk about your career a bit? Because you are one of these people that is just so familiar. I mean, if you're working down the street, people think they know you, as in, you know, the way sometimes when you see a famous person and it's like, oh, there's a, so you actually think, you get this weird delusion that you know the person. And I think your face is someone like that.
You know,
it was loads of people thinking, and then realizing, oh no, it's your woman.
It's funny, because I was signing books yesterday in Eason's in Nassau Street, just kind of block signing. Yeah. And the man that was kind of helping me said, you know, it's really gas, he said, because there's people coming in and they're looking for Mary's book. They don't actually say Mary Kennedy. Have you got Mary's book?
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But do you get that in the supermarket, people kind of looking at you and you kind of know that's someone who's now going?
My kids sometimes say, oh, you've been clocked. Most people will be quite, you know, friendly and familiar.
Yeah.
And particularly outside of Dublin, you can have great chats. And I do like when people come up and say, well, you know, that programme that you did on Nationwide was really struck a chord with me, or something you wrote about in your book. Kind of, it's nice to know we're not, you know, that we're all in this together and that we all have our... And we are all vulnerable, and we all do have good times and bad times, and the good times are better for having had the bad times.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that one. Nationwide is an institution now, isn't it? How long has it been going?
We are celebrating our 25th anniversary next month.
Have you ever seen like Maeve Higgins writing about it or talking? Maeve Higgins,
yes.
Oh my God, she does pay such tribute to it in terms of, you know, she's having a laugh as well. But it is
But it's very complimentary.
It is complimentary. Yeah, and it's such a unique program. I mean, you could be down around the country doing all sorts of things, mm-hmm. things that you'd be looking at going, I can't believe this is on the telly. But it's, you know, but it's important and it's ordinary and it's somebody's life and you're learning about a way of life that you mightn't have any window into.
Absolutely. And if you watch on Friday, you'll see the reinvigoration of a furnace festival in
a Mary,
tiny
this is
village.
This is brilliant. Now, Maeve would have a field day with this.
Of Woodford in County Galway. Which was, the village grew up in the 17th and 18th century. I didn't know this because I was doing the programme, around smelting and iron ore.
Okay.
And it's a tiny village. It's absolutely gorgeous. It has a great sense of community. It suffered hugely during the recession with emigration. And now there are these people who are, you know, saying, let's have a furnace festival again. So they're putting up braziers, men and women.
Brilliant.
The woman who got the biggest chunk of iron ore out of her, you know, project that day was a woman called Monica. She was fab. And you know, I just love those kinds of, I love it. Also, can I say that Woodford, pulling itself up by its bootlaces since the recession, got an Endeavour Award in the Tidy Towns, which is another thing that Nationwide is closely affiliated with this year. And they're very proud of that. And I love reading out those names and saying, God, well done.
It's interesting when you talk about your mum and dad and the community thing.
Huge.
I mean, in a way, what you're doing with Nationwide, I mean, it's all of that just put on a bigger stage and nationwide, you know, but it incorporates all those things. Your mum and dad were obviously just passionate about connections and being involved in everything around you. So
yeah, that's for sure. I suppose I think young children absorb things like a sponge, as we all know. And you also absorb those kinds of things as well, even though you're maybe not part of them. And I am at a stage now where I can, you know, I'm part of the Vincent de Paul in my, which I'm really glad about because my father was in the Vincent de Paul in Clondalkin. But when I do a story, say, about the ICA, I'm familiar with that territory.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm familiar with it, those kinds of things. And I think in this country, we're unique in that we have a very outward-looking personality. We care about what happens in the next street or down in the village centre or whatever. Mm. And you don't find that everywhere around the world. And I think, you know, it's something to be treasured and showcased. And, you know, Nationwide is the perfect vehicle for it.
I like that you kind of laugh when you say
it. Love it.
Because I think the spirit of Nationwide is also that funniness. It doesn't take itself seriously at all either. No. And kind of you can sense, you know, that there's that little lilt in your voice.
Yeah, and it's conversational and it's chatty and you get a great welcome. The first thing we do when we go into a community or a village
is
have coffee.
You must have eaten a lot of scones, I'd say, over the years. Coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always a welcome. Michael Ryan, now this hasn't happened in so much in my day. It's not my personal experience. Maybe he's just, you know, kind of gilding the lily as well. But he used to say when he started off doing Nationwide 25 years ago that you could almost smell the fresh paint when you go
into the Queen. The Queen, that's the most familiar smell she has because everywhere she goes, that's funny.
Yeah.
And what about people you admire in broadcasting? Like, who have been your mentors or people that you've looked up to and learned from? Because obviously you've been around RT for a long time now.
40 years.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What did you do first, Mary?
I was a teacher. I'm a teacher
when you went
by trade. Continuity.
Right.
And then
how did you get the idea to go and do that?
I answered an ad in the paper.
What was the ad saying?
Yeah, it was.
Did you know what that meant?
Because it was all part-time. There was all continuity announcers. Thelma Mansfield used to be on screen,
Kathleen,
and Maura de Barra and Kathleen Watkins.
Gay Burns,
yeah. They were all, like, everything was envisioned back in those days. And I had just come back from France, where I'd been teaching English for a year, and I had gotten a job in the local secondary school. And I saw this ad, and I said, well, I'd always worked part-time while I was in college as well. And I said,
so you were going to do the teaching and this job?
I did. Yeah, I did. And it's funny though, because I suppose being from Clondalkin, I answered the ad and I told nobody, not even my mother, because I felt, you know, that people would be saying, who does she think she is from Clondalkin heading over to I didn't even know where Donnybrook, I don't think I'd ever been in Donnybrook. But yeah, that's how it started.
And what did your mum and dad think when then you were, there you were?
My dad had died, sadly, when I was in that year in France, and he would have loved it. He would have been 6 foot tall.
Delighted walking around.
It would have been
And what
really
about your mum? What did she think?
Absolutely petrified. A, that something would go wrong or that somebody might be nasty to me.
You can imagine that.
Or the bigger fear she had was that I might lose the run of myself.
And that you'd suddenly just start...
That I'd become a star.
Oh, right.
That'd be worse.
That'd
I think
be
she'd
terrible.
Prefer people to have a go at me than for me to lose the run of myself.
Okay, that's kind of a bit typical as well, isn't it?
I suppose so,
And you, so you basically went through RTE like that.
Ranks.
And got loads of different experiences. And
yeah, they were wonderful.
Was there anyone in there that really, like, that we would know broadcaster-wise that kind of helped you or that gave you a leg up or inspired you?
Well, Gay Byrne was, I can remember when I was going for the audition for the Eurovision for the third time.
Oh, you did? Did you
I
got
did.
Rejected a couple of times?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you still went back?
Yeah, I went back. Oh, I was dying to do it. Dying to do it. And on the third time lucky.
They let you.
And I often, if you know, when I'd be talking to students, I would say that to them. He used to say, look, go in there and be yourself. Because if you're yourself and you don't get it, well, fair enough. If you're trying to be something you're not, you always get found out. And I think that's the best bit of advice, really, that anybody could give. Mm-hmm. And then when I did get it, there was a producer in RTE who was kind of, he was a drama producer, so he was kind of mentoring me for performance. And on the day of the Eurovision, in The Point, as it was then, this huge, big, oversized postcard came from, made in the graphics department, and it was a television screen, an old-fashioned television screen, and just written across it was, "Be delighted." And that is my mantra now for anything I'm doing. You know, it's be delighted. Take delight in what you're doing. And, you know, you could be going to do a story maybe about fertilizers, which would not be the thing that's closest
or furnaces.
To my heart.
Or furnaces.
Yeah. And it might not be. Well, I find that fascinating.
I know. I can hear
but
that you
could
you
be
did.
Doing, you know,
could be.
Spiders going up the wall.
Right.
And people like I'm not somebody who would be interested in that kind of thing, but I'm fascinated to know about the people who are and why they are. So,
so
you know, if you can take
thing.
That, be delighted. Yes.
No, it's lovely. Why was be delighted on that big promo?
That was what he kept saying to me all the time when we were meeting for these learning how to walk down steps sessions and, you know, standing up straight sessions and not looking down sessions. And he was always saying, just be delighted. Because I was very shy, you know, and I mean, going from continuity and reading an odd news bulletin to presenting the Eurovision was a big step.
Can we go back to the Rose Tralee? Because you've been involved for a long time and you've seen it kind of, I mean, in a way, people give it a very hard time, and I have in the past, but it's so unique, and it's something that people flip and love. Like, whatever you say about it, the audiences are massive, and the contestants are very different now to, say, what they would have been years ago. In terms of the breadth, I just mean in terms of what they're doing and what they're up to.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest way of finding out what the Rose of Tralee is about is to actually go to it. And most people who, you know, have a jaundiced or maybe a cynical view, when they go, they realise that it's so, so wholesome and fun and affirmative and uplifting. I don't think it's right to say that they're better.
No, I didn't actually mean that, but I just mean because women generally now are doing different things. So
yes,
of course there's going to
exactly.
be...
Exactly. I think the women were of their time. I think, I mean, I'm friendly with the woman who's now in her 70s who won the
very first one. What's
she's
her name
amazing,
again?
She's amazing. Alice O'Sullivan.
Alice, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, she is a dynamo.
She's great.
She's an amazing woman.
So even at that time, she was a bit exceptional at the time.
We did a programme on former Roses, and she was one of the people we interviewed, and she was 19 and she was very shy.
Right.
And she said that even when she won, if people said, you know, oh, you're the Rose of Tralee, she'd say, no, you're mixing me up with my cousin. It's my cousin who's the Rose of Tralee.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. But the women that are there, they have more confidence. Mm. As you say, they have a wider breadth of opportunity, I think. That's the main
thing. It's because they live in this age and they're not in the 70s, 80s or whatever.
Yeah. And they are modern Irish women. A lot of them represent the diaspora. And the rose that we chose for this year represents another aspect of Ireland.
I loved that dress. That was my favourite that ever walked on that stage.
Well, I loved Maria. I love that length.
Yeah.
And
you don't
Maria
see
Walsh,
that length very often.
No, it's kind of a ballet length. Yeah, it's the same length. Yeah. Very nice. But they all look fab. Yeah. They're all gorgeous, and they're all.
And you're a judge, and you love the whole crack, and you every year it's your big thing. You go down and.
Yes, I do. I'm chair of the judging panel, so it's kind of responsible.
Oh, yeah.
Like everybody has a great time at the ball on the Friday night, but we start judging at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, you know, so it's, and you're in a room. And people say, well, I hope you got good weather. And so it doesn't actually make much difference what the weather's like.
So listen, just before you go, what's next for you, Mary? Do you have any, are you a kind of 5-year plan person or
no,
are you very much a...
not anymore.
Did you used to be? Yeah.
Well, I suppose when I was younger and when you're looking at the different stages of your children's lives and getting them through primary school, secondary school, college. And I'm really proud of the fact that they are all now earning.
Nice. Success.
Yeah. And that they're happy and that they're in lovely relationships. Mm. And we have another wedding coming up next year, which is nice. And that it's very nice to kind of get on with your son-in-law and your potential daughters-in-law, you know.
And just going back to the burnout thing, you actually found a way forward. You took 2 weeks off holiday, didn't you? And you kind of...
Yeah, but that was only the start, really. Yeah. That was the kind
you've
of...
You've been doing things ever since. Yeah.
Yes, making changes. And one of them would be not to have a big forward plan and not to feel the need to fill every moment, you know, to kind of say, I've nothing on this weekend. Great. And just see what happens. Because I'm so busy and away a lot with work, I tend to kind of feel almost duty bound to catch up with people when I am off. But no, just let that happen now. And it's nice, you know, living in the moment.
Good. Oh, I know. Wouldn't we all love to be doing that? It's great.
Well, you can at certain stages in life. But, you know, when you've got children responsibilities and things like that.
Talk to me. So listen, you're happy then?
Yeah.
In yourself?
Very.
And do you think doing those...
Which doesn't mean that I don't have moments, you know.
Days. But you've, the changes you've made and the kind of, the change it seems like in your psyche almost, or the outlook has kind of reduced those symptoms you were talking about.
Definitely.
And made
definitely.
You calmer in yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I don't have the shaky arms or the shortness of breath. I say anymore, but like for the moment, you know, I think we have to take huge care of our mental health. And, you know, it's only about 5 or 6 years since people are talking openly about mental health, which is good. But there have been so many taboo subjects in our psyche in this country that we're really only catching up.
Yeah. Oh, we are. And we've a lot more to do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, it's a bit like royalty coming into our studio today. And I know as you walk out through the newsroom, there'll be heads turnings. But I'm just really glad you came in. And
thank
congratulations
you for the
on your book.
Roisin.
The book is called Home Thoughts from the Heart. It's full of gorgeous pictures, a recipe
and nice
for French
recipes.
Dressing.
Well, there's recipes.
I haven't seen the
loads.
Other recipes.
Yeah, there's a chapter of recipes.
Okay, I missed that chapter. Okay,
chocolate biscuit cake.
Oh,
yeah, Christmas cake.
Do you put raisins in your chocolate biscuit cake?
Yes, and
I don't like them with raisins. I'll take out the raisins.
And marshmallows and Maltesers.
Oh God, that's a whole like a Tiffin thing, is it?
Yeah, it's an Odlums recipe. It's actually not mine. It's Eva's. She made it for her wedding cake.
Right. Well, it's all in there, and it's really, really lovely. It's the kind of thing you can have by your bed and flick
there
through.
You go.
And it's just you've got a lovely way of, you know, being very wise and warm and kind of easy, and it's nice. It's a comforting
it comes
read.
With age.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Roisin.
Thank you. Thanks very much to Mary Kennedy for being my guest in this week's episode. The book is called Home Thoughts from the Heart, and it would make a lovely gift as well, actually. That's it from me. The podcast is produced by Jennifer Ryan with JJ Vernon on sound. I'm Roisin Ingle, and I'll talk to you next time.